You don't have to look very far to find people who are suffering.
Record levels of homelessness.
To some people, they're a number. They're this piece of paper. To me, they have a story.
As cities and towns across the nation scramble to address this growing crisis, we look at the range of contributing factors.
It was a big transition for me, you know, not only physically, you know, but emotionally and mentally as well.
Including the trauma of life on the streets.
They need food, they need shelter. But more than anything, I think what they really need is compassion.
The work of cities and nonprofits to turn the tide of homelessness in America.
I think one misconception is that those experiencing homelessness are either don't want to work or are too busy trying to get drugs or what have you, when there's a lot more layers behind that.
And how seeing the whole person and walking with them in their suffering can help us love them as Christ. EWTN News In Depth starts now.
So I want people who are unhoused to know that they are fully, beautifully, powerfully children of God, just like the rest of us.
Unhoused, but not unloved. Homelessness impacts nearly every community in America. Thousands of people, from individuals to families, youth to veterans, have no place to call home. The nameless people you may walk by every day, many unseen, were created like you and me in the image and likeness of God. Welcome to this special episode of EWTN News In Depth, focusing on the rise in homelessness in America. We're on the ground in several states across the country, from California to New York, with the personal stories of those living on the streets, in tents, and in temporary housing, as well as the work being done to help get them back on their feet. More than 650,000 people experienced homelessness at one point in time in 2023, according to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. That's a 12% increase from the year before and the steepest rise since the government began the tally in 2007. This map provides a quick snapshot at homelessness in each state. More than half of people experiencing it live in just four states: California, New York, Florida, and Washington State. Narrowing in each region of the country, starting with the western states, the darker the shading, the larger the percentage of homeless people who live there. You can see coastal states have greater percentages of unhoused. In the Midwest, the number is largest in Illinois. In the South, not only Florida, as we mentioned, but also Texas. And in the Northeast, New York and Vermont dominate with the largest percentage. The Catholic Church has been at the forefront of outreach to the poor and marginalized, following the teachings of Jesus Christ. Entire charisms and multiple apostolates are dedicated to serving people in the peripheries. Some of America's first saints, like Elizabeth Ann Seton and Mother Frances Xavier Cabrini, dedicated their lives to the sick and poor. They launched orphanages and schools to help thousands who were abandoned. The tradition continues today, not just with religious orders, but also led by the laity, with dioceses and individual volunteers who dedicate their time to serving unhoused populations, embodying the spirit of Christ to walk with them in their suffering. They provide food banks, soup kitchens, housing, health care, job training. The most crucial part of these missions? The prayers they say with and for those they serve. One of the American Church's largest relief organizations is Catholic Charities USA. Catholic Charities works through 168 diocesan agencies across the country to support local communities. In 2022, Catholic Charities served more than 30 million meals and found almost 40,000 permanent housing units for unhoused people, including families, seniors, and veterans. As we mentioned, California has the largest homeless population in the country, due in a large part to a severe shortage of affordable housing and the growing mental health crisis. The state attempted to address this crisis through a vote on March 5th. Proposition 1 would authorize $6.4 billion in bonds and direct billions more to fix the mental health system and provide housing. Despite widespread support from state lawmakers, California voters were split down the middle, and the vote is too close to call. California is the fifth largest economy in the world. Even with all that money, the state still struggles to combat homelessness. EWTN News In-Depth's Rizal Rages traveled to two cities in Southern California to take a closer look.
Los Angeles, the city of angels. With almost 4 million people living in L.A., it is the second most populous city in the United States. Known as the center of the nation's film and television industry, with miles of stunning beaches lining the coast. But there's a less glamorous side of L.A. that people tend to turn a blind eye to. That is the growing unhoused population. The 2023 Greater Los Angeles Homeless Count showed that more than 75,000 people experienced homelessness in Los Angeles County, and some 46,000 in the city. Compared to the year prior, that is a 9% increase in homelessness in the county and a 10% rise in the city.
Why do we have anybody who has to live on the margins when what the church teaches and what God, I think, wants us to know and believe is that all people should be welcome?
In East Los Angeles, in the Boyle Heights district, you will find Dolores Mission Church, where the unhoused population is welcomed with open arms. Father Brendan Bussey is the pastor of Dolores Mission Church, the only sanctuary homeless shelter in Los Angeles. Dolores Mission Church was founded by Belgian nuns nearly a century ago, but is now a Jesuit-run parish.
What started here started by the most humble, poorest people turning to each other and saying, if this is what Jesus is doing, what can we do?
In response to poverty, gang violence, incarceration, lack of child safety, lagging education, and homelessness in Boyle Heights, parishioners put faith into action. The parish community and associate pastor at the time, Father Gregory Boyle, founded Proyecto Pastoral in 1986. More than 30 years later, Proyecto now has five community-based programs, serving over 2,500 children, youth, and families annually. One of those programs is the Guadalupe Homeless Project, which operates out of Dolores Mission Church.
Dolores Mission Church opened the doors to their most sacred space, the sanctuary, so that unhoused refugee families have a place to sleep at night. And since then, it has grown into a bigger community.
Scuff marks line the walls inside the church. This is where cots are placed every night, right by the wooden pews.
Our shelter has one of the highest success rates of placing people into permanent housing. And I think part of what that is that we communicate to them their worth. We let them sleep not in the backyard, but in our church, in where our altar is, in our sanctuary.
We don't like to call it shelter. We call it, this is your home. So when the shelter residents, they arrive, we call them Guadalupanos, because the name of the shelter Guadalupe. So we call them Guadalupanos or Guadalupanas.
The Guadalupe Homeless Project currently houses 41 men in the parish grounds and 15 women ages 55 and older in a separate facility just a mile away. Program Director Veronica Mesa explains that in addition to providing shelter, meals, and showers, each resident is assigned a social worker who connects them with resources and services in the community.
I feel like I can connect with them, with the shelter residents, because my philosophy is that you have to see someone as a human being and not as a problem.
Service here at Dolores Mission isn't a sacrifice we do. It's really the most joyful, fullest version of what it means for us to be a human community, what it means for us to be a church.
124 miles south of Los Angeles is America's finest city, San Diego.
San Diego, for the longest time, the motto has been the most beautiful city. And it really is a beautiful city, but it's a city that has grown a lot and very quickly. And with that, housing costs have gotten so expensive. And so we're at the point now where our homeless numbers are increasing every month. More people are coming into homelessness versus exiting homelessness.
In 2023, a point in time count found 10,264 individuals experiencing homelessness in San Diego, an increase of 14% over the previous year. 5,171 of those are unsheltered. Ruth Bruland is the chief program officer at Father Joe's Villages, one of the region's largest homelessness services providers. On the East Village of downtown San Diego, you can find their four-block campus. From a day center that people can seek shelter away from the streets, access to showers, a mailroom, and storage, to a health center that provides medical and dental care, to child care facilities, to several housing units. Established in 1950 to serve San Diegans experiencing homelessness and poverty, Father Joe's Villages now houses more than 2,000 people nightly.
They just have to get that opportunity. And that's what Father Joe's can provide, that opportunity. And that's, I think that's why our staff sticks so close to our mission statement, you know, one life at a time. Because it is. Sure. It's one life at a time that this amazing, amazing stuff can happen.
Father Joe's provides a variety of housing programs, such as affordable housing for people living on a low income, rapid rehousing for clients who need short-term rental assistance, transitional shelter for families and people with life-threatening illnesses, and supportive housing for clients living with a disability.
Right behind me is the St. Teresa of Calcutta Villa. It's an affordable housing community of Father Joe's Villages. Just this building alone has 407 units.
One of the many residents under Father Joe's housing programs is Lister.
About 5 years ago, I just got out of prison, and I came out. I only had a pair of flip-flops, a T-shirt, and a pair of shorts. No money, no nothing. I was in the streets. I kept getting robbed, going everywhere. And I found Father Joe's. They took me in. They gave me a place to live. They put me through programs. Thank God for Father Joe's. I'm telling you. He saves so many people's lives.
Serving as a volunteer, he in turn wants to be a helping hand to other people in need. Another volunteer is Pat Shagnon.
I choose to volunteer because my sister had a problem with drugs, and she just couldn't overcome it. But she was always welcomed here at Father Joe's. Our hope is that we continue to keep our hearts open, to do the work and show dignity and show love and show kindness to each person we meet.
Roselle Regis, EWTN News in Depth.
Deacon Jim Vargas joins us now to continue our discussion on homelessness in California. He's president and CEO of Father Joe's Villages. Deacon Jim, we just saw Roselle Regis' story that gave us insight on your ministry. How did it get started?
Thanks, Melissa, for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you. Well, it got started, as has been said, back in 1950. And it got started handing out peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. It was as simple as that. There was a need. People were suffering on the streets. And the church, you know, we have that preferential option for the poor, as Christ did. And it's just reaching out to the poor. And then it expanded into a few nights of shelter. And you fast forward to the 1980s, when someone by the name of Father Joe Carroll was assigned to this ministry. And he recognized that the services were all scattered amongst the community, and came to realize that in order to be most effective in helping these individuals, that we needed to have a one-stop shop. And that's what Father Joe's Villages is. But it isn't a cookie-cutter approach. It very much is very tailored to the unique circumstances of the individual, because everyone is at a different stage, I like to say, in their journey out of homelessness. And so just having the tailored approach is what we find is so very effective. And so it's now been built into, we have quite an organization, 450 to 500 employees. Wow. Who work in our health center. And within the health center, we have a street health component, again, meeting people where they are on the streets, because we know that a third of them won't access medicine in a traditional way in brick and mortar. So going out to them, meeting them where they are, and administering to their wounds,
right,
dispensing medication.
Spirit of encounter. Absolutely.
Exactly, exactly. And then, and just psychiatry, we've added psychiatry. We know about a third to 40% of the individuals on the street are, have some level of mental health challenges, have substance use disorder. So we work with medication-assisted treatment, Suboxone, to try to wean them off of these substances as well. The street health team is so compassionate about what they do. And then we have our dental clinic, and this is all within our health center. Then we care for our kids. You know, the kids who come to us are academically, right, emotionally, socially delayed. And if we don't break that, we don't mitigate those circumstances, they're going to be the future adults. So we work with our children. We have over almost 1,000 shelter beds, I should say, and we help about 3,000 people on a nightly basis, shelter including affordable housing as well, that we make available to them. Our employment center is so very critical. With marketable skills comes employment and then self-sufficiency, right, through income.
Well, that's really fantastic. But Deacon Jim, Father Joe's Villages also has a new initiative called Turning the Key. You plan on building two new affordable housing communities by 2026. What can you tell us about this initiative?
Well, we started the Turning the Key initiative back in 2017 because we saw that while we have shelter beds and not enough of those, and we need more shelter beds, what we don't have is enough affordable housing. And so we knew that that's what breaks the cycle of homelessness. So we embarked on the endeavor, and that turned out to be Turning the Key. We said we would deploy 2,000 units into the market, and they would be either through new construction or the acquisition and refurbishment of motels. And so we have a Benson Place, what we call Benson Place, which is a refurbished motel in the South Bay area, 83 spanking new units. And we have the permanent supportive housing for those with some level of disability. And then we have St. Teresa of Calcutta Villa, which you have featured, which is 407 units, right? That's new construction. Mm-hmm. And it has 270 permanent supportive housing units there as well. And to your point, that Monse, we're not stopping there. I mean, that's about 500 units thereabouts. But we have a commitment to build a lot more because a lot more are necessary. So we have three different facilities at this point in time that we have slated on which to break ground either later this year or the beginning of next year. Each of them will have about 100 units.
Wow.
And they'll be in various locations. And again, we keep chipping at it. And that's what you do. You keep chipping at it. You know, initially I was told at the beginning, why are you guys doing this? You're barking up the wrong tree. It takes too long to build housing. It's too costly. Shelters is what we need. And I agree, shelters, we need more shelters. But really, unless we have housing so that there's a progression into a place that they can call their own, we're not going to really be adequately solving homelessness, basically.
Right. Well, Deacon Jim, really quickly, we don't have a lot of time, but what is the difference then between everything that you all are doing and the way that the state approaches breaking the cycle of homelessness?
Well, I think what we do, first and foremost, is the compassionate approach that we take. We see the dignity of every individual as being made in God's image, right? Homelessness does not define an individual, right? It's a stage in their life, and it's unfortunate they may have fallen into homelessness because of economic reasons, because of other factors, substance use disorder, mental health challenges, but homelessness does not define them. So what we do is we reinstill that hope in them, tap into their potential, provide the resources and love that they need in order to really be able to lift themselves up and then be able to move forward. And that's what's important. So it's all these programs that we have, that we offer, they're the resources, but these individuals are the ones who step up and take advantage of these programs to be able to lift themselves up and out of their states of homelessness. And I think that's what we bring as an institution, as an organization that dates back to 1950. It's that compassionate, the passionate approach to things, and also being able to efficiently utilize the dollars. If we want to make sure that we're good stewards of the funds that are entrusted to us, so that if we see that something's not working, then we repurpose those dollars and those programs in order to be most effective in the lives of these individuals and utilize the dollars as efficiently as possible.
Well, they're certainly relying on you to keep doing this great work. Thank you so much, Deacon Jim.
You're very welcome, Monsieur. God bless you.
God bless you. Ahead on EWTN News In Depth, you've heard of tiny homes. One organization is going super tiny with a super strong structure that can even withstand hurricanes. We get a glimpse inside.
Homelessness in New York City has overwhelmed the shelter system, leaving hundreds of people to line up here day after day, literally just looking for a place to stay the night. I'm Mark Irons with that story coming up.
Plus, Understanding Corporal Works of Mercy. A special EWTN guest explains.
Depending on our situations, we're always a step away from something going completely wrong in our lives. And going into homelessness and experiencing homelessness sometimes happens to somebody out of the blue.
Unexpected. Homelessness does not discriminate, and it can happen to anyone. Every person who lacks a permanent place to rest their head has a story of how they got there. On this broadcast of EWTN News In Depth, we're telling those stories from communities across the country, including the streets of New York. Mark Iron spoke with those newly arrived to the city with no place to live, others who've struggled with homelessness there for years, and the volunteers hoping to make a difference.
These friends are on their way to visit another friend, Jose.
Got some coffee.
Over coffee, he likes to talk baseball. His favorite team is the New York Mets.
Hopefully they win the World Series.
Jose grew up here in New York City. Now he lives on the streets. Volunteers with this lay Catholic community called Sant Egidio help him out.
What's it like when they come over and they're
Oh, it's great. They bring me sandwich, coffee, bring me gloves.
Beyond meeting material needs, they aim to form friendships.
It's just like going to visit any other friend. You keep that relationship alive.
Kathy Soba has been doing this for years. Each week, she goes out along a familiar route with others from Sant Egidio. Motivated by the gospel, they get to know and love their neighbors who have no home.
The hungry, the elderly, the children that we meet, they are our brothers and sisters. So we are living the gospel out through seeing them and treating them like our brothers and sisters.
According to the advocacy organization Coalition for the Homeless, in recent years, homelessness in New York City has reached the highest levels since the Great Depression of the 1930s. Concerned groups like Sant Egidio or Catholic Charities see more than numbers.
Those who are without homes are individuals, and they have very, very different stories.
Monsignor Kevin Sullivan is the executive director of Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of New York. Helping serve people in need has been his work for the past 20 years. We asked him about the reasons men and women may end up on the street or in a shelter. His response was instant.
Because they don't have enough money to pay the rent. If people had enough money to pay the rent, the majority of people who are in shelters wouldn't be there.
Pointing to the high cost of living in New York, he says even people who are working may still be without a home.
There are questions of addiction, there are questions of mental illness. But that's only a part of the story. The main story is that there are families who are in shelters because their wages just are insufficient to pay the rent.
And now even more people are experiencing homelessness as a surge of migrants have come to the city needing a place to stay. Some of the migrants, after passing through the U.S.-Mexico border, were sent here on buses by the state of Texas. A New York City official told us New York City has received over 100,000 migrants since last spring due to busing efforts by elected officials from other states looking for political gains. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said earlier this year every migrant bused or flown to New York City did so voluntarily after having been authorized by the Biden administration to remain in the United States. Either way, New York City Mayor Eric Adams says the homeless shelter system is overwhelmed. Migrants are learning that firsthand. Finding a place to stay is hard enough, but keeping it is also challenging. Day after day, hundreds of people are lining up here just to receive a ticket that grants them temporary shelter in the city. A Catholic school that closed in 2019, the St. Bridget building now serves as a ticketing center run by the city. An official told us migrants are lining up here to request placement in a shelter, or after having spent 60 days in one shelter exhausting their stay, they return here to request a new placement, or they can receive help relocating outside of the city. The park adjacent to St. Bridget is packed with many men who migrated here from African countries.
And tell me about the journey you took from Africa to get here.
The journey was not easy. The journey was hard.
Amadou has been in the U.S. for a couple months. He described a journey that took him from his West African country of Guinea to Turkey, on to Colombia and South America, then up through Central America and into the U.S. through the Mexico border.
From there, a flight landed him in New York. Back in Guinea, he says he took part in demonstrations to protest corrupt government rule, but then he felt he had to flee.
Life not to not really safe, so that's why I leave the country.
It's unclear if the U.S. will become Amadou's permanent future home. For now, he's just looking for a stable place to sleep.
You sleep outside?
Yes.
But you sometimes stay in the shelter?
Yes, yes.
Throughout the city, those who experience homelessness come from a variety of backgrounds.
Every poor person is a different story.
And sleeping on a sidewalk or inside a train station can be just their latest life challenge.
Spare some change to get something to eat, man. Good morning.
We spoke with a man named D, who, living on the streets himself, has seen what others are struggling with.
Drug abuse, depression, mental health problems, alcohol, stubbornness in my case, just not appreciating what was given to me by my family, thinking I knew it all.
And then we met a woman named Dixie. She told us she didn't foresee being in this situation, and she is facing it without family.
I'm alone. My family died. A mother, father, a sister, and brother all died. Didn't know that was going to happen. Didn't know the future.
Dixie says if you encounter a poor person like her, try to reach out in some way.
Try to reach out, even though they look like a mess. Even though they look like a mess, try to reach out. Yeah.
That's exactly what these volunteers with the community of Sant'Egidio are doing.
You know, we have to base what we do off of what Jesus Christ did.
And volunteer Dylan McGinty is calling on his fellow Catholics.
It's wrong for Catholics to not be doing something about it, in my opinion. You know, we can't be idle and just let the problem manifest itself. We need to make sure that we're out on the streets.
Working with homeless individuals has been rewarding for Monsignor Sullivan and Catholic Charities.
We've been able to touch so many people made in God's image and likeness,
including people like Timmy. He comes to pray inside Monsignor's parish. He was baptized and became Catholic about 10 years ago.
And he keeps coming. He comes pretty much every day, don't you?
I have to.
You have to. How are you feeling?
I feel good. I feel good.
You've been good? You taking your medicine?
Yeah, I just need a sandwich, Father.
Good. You need a sandwich?
Yes, sir.
We'll get you a sandwich.
Timmy carries around a bag with all his belongings, and he showed us one thing he keeps inside.
Yep, here's his baptismal certificate.
That's the certificate right there.
That's his baptismal certificate.
He may not have a place to live, but he does have proof of a home, and he's proud of it. Mark Irons, EWTN News in Devon.
Monsignor Kevin Sullivan with Catholic Charities in New York told us that service to the poor is closely connected to practicing a sacramental life in the church. Catholics are called to live both aspects of their faith. And we'll talk about just that when we return.
I never really, you know, saw myself, and I'm pretty sure none of us, you know, regardless of what lifestyle we come from, what background we come from, seeing ourselves as being homeless.
And we meet culinary artist Eric Cox, who's finally able to follow his passion after living in a tent. In the freezing cold and drenching rain, in the heat and unforgivable sun, those without a roof over their heads or walls to protect them are some of the most vulnerable in our nation. Welcome back to our special episode on homelessness in America. The church calls us to help our homeless neighbors and calls on us to practice the corporal works of mercy. Father Robert Spitzer, president of the Magis Center on Faith and Science and host of Father Spitzer's Universe on EWTN, joins us to talk about what that means. Father Spitzer, welcome. You're known as a man of science. But before Father Spitzer's Universe, you increased curricula on service and ethics as president of Gonzaga University. Break down for us with your teacher hat. What are the corporal works of mercy?
Well, the corporal works of mercy are defined in Matthew 25 very precisely, where Jesus says, I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. I was sick, and in need of shelter, and you comforted me. I was in prison, and you get the entire span of the corporal works of mercy right there. Jesus takes that, of course, very seriously, indicating even that our own judgment would be dependent on whether or not we really had a heart to serve those in need, specifically those temporal needs as well as spiritual needs.
It's a beautiful connection. And Father Spitzer, with the crisis of faith our country's experiencing, how does service then help us to turn the tide of unbelief, especially among young people?
Well, I think young people actually have a heart for serving the poor. And so I think that's one of the ways, and Pope Francis has certainly identified it as one of the ways in which we could base our evangelization efforts. If that's where their heart is, and their heart is clearly in the right place, our young people, one of the ways we can do that is to, as a church, begin to say, hey, why not serve the Lord by serving these poor people for which you have a heart, and at the same time serve their spiritual needs. So, there's a Caritas in Veritate, an organization that I've been working with a long time, and they are trying to recruit young people to go into places like Haiti or, African countries of various kinds. And what they're trying to do is serve them. They're, of course, digging wells, and they're trying to put a roof over their heads, or trying to provide medical services in conjunction with the Sisters of Mercy. But at the same time, they're trying to say, hey, if you want to come pray with us, we have our nightly prayer at X hour. And if you want to attend Mass here, you're always welcome to come. We're putting up a chapel over here. In Guadalupe, or if you want just a little class or some teaching, both in English or teaching in math, and at the same time get some teaching in religion and for your spirit, these things give hope too.
Yes.
So that great encyclical Pope Benedict, Caritas in Veritate, where literally taking care of the temporal needs of the poor can be complemented by the Veritate, the truth that brings hope, the spiritual hope for the eternity of those. You put the two together, the temporal care with the spiritual care, and all of a sudden you really see a real improvement in the lives of these people.
It's that wonderful complementarity. Well, we're running out of time, but last quick question. Is there another example of an apostolate that's getting this right? We recently had someone say that the state doesn't really understand the human person. It's the church that understands the human person. Is there another example that you would give of an apostolate that's doing this well?
Well, I think there is. This model of taking care of homelessness in San Diego, I think, is really quite remarkable, called Sunbreak Ranch. And what they are trying to do there is, of course, obviously, they're trying to, people are just, populating the streets of San Diego in the downtown area, 20,000, 30,000 strong. And what they're trying to do is bring them into a place where they can get not only medical facilities, but to help with substance abuse, obviously food, shelter, et cetera, in a place where they can really get their needs met. And in so doing that, to bring about, a real full futuristic, including, education and vocational training that will really not just take care of their present needs, but also help them to become citizens for the future. And so I think that Sunbreak Ranch model may provide a real good model going forward for homelessness in other cities.
Well, a great roadmap and something to watch. Thank you so much, Father Spitzer. Use the EWTN app and click On Demand to find more content on Corporal Works of Mercy. And Corporal Works of Mercy are in full force in the state of Florida. EWTN News contributor Catherine Hadro brings us a report on the innovative Hope Cottages, launched by Catholic Charities that are providing refuge for the unhoused in Tampa.
Florida may be known for its beaches, theme parks, and great weather, but there's an aspect to the Sunshine State that's not so bright. Florida had an 18.5% jump in its unhoused population over the last year, with nearly 5,000 more homeless seeking shelter under the sun.
I mean, obviously, it starts with our climate, right?
John Bennett is the city of Tampa's chief of staff. Florida's cities with the highest homeless populations include Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, and the Tampa Bay area. Bennett says combating homelessness is a top five priority for the city of Tampa, with the goal of caring for the human person while also ensuring community safety.
The balancing act is you start by caring for the individual and their needs, but you have to have an eye on disorder as well. And, you know, we have had businesses that clearly will complain about their business opportunities.
We have a very high rate of homelessness.
Maggie Rogers leads Catholic Charities in the Diocese of St. Petersburg. She says the reasons for the homelessness rise range from their warmer winters to increasing inflation.
An average client of ours that is earning Social Security disability is making $900 a month, and so they simply can't afford to live in a home.
COVID would become the catalyst for how the local Catholic Charities handles care for the homeless. At the start of the pandemic, Rogers proposed Tampa build a trial homeless shelter.
At first, the mayor's office said, tents in the city of Tampa. And I said, yeah. And they're like, let me think about this.
Catholic Charities got the green light and support from the mayor. Within 1 week, it opened a mock shelter with 100 tents for 2 months.
And the city of Tampa is like, you kind of know what you're doing on homeless services. That was the jump start of Tampa Hope.
Tampa Hope is probably hasn't been done nowhere.
Eric Marrero directs the Tampa Hope Homeless Shelter.
Tampa Hope is a program. So we are a shelter for those that are experiencing homelessness, but we're more than just a shelter.
Tampa Hope provides 3 meals a day, toiletries, clothing, shower and laundry facilities, and case managers to help clients navigate services for housing, healthcare, substance abuse counseling, and more. The housing program uniquely combines both tents and these innovative Hope cottages, set to open in the spring.
All right, so I'll take a look at one of these.
Each 64-square-foot Hope Cottage can house one or two people with folding beds, electric air conditioning, heating, and power outlets. It can also resist Category 5 hurricane winds.
Tampa Hope currently serves 125 residents, but when these cottages open up this spring, they'll be able to serve 235, with room for an additional 100 people in the future.
Each resident has a different reason they are here, but Tampa Hope's director says every homeless person experiences two things, financial poverty and relational poverty.
Relational poverty is not having that mom, dad, sister, uncle, brother, somebody who can take you in, somebody who can help you out.
Devin Jackson lives in tent number 46 at Tampa Hope. His life began in brokenness 48 years ago.
My mother was killed by my father when she was 8 months pregnant with me.
Raised by his grandmother, Jackson says he began experimenting with crack cocaine at the age of 19. And at 22, says his life took a downturn from there.
Well, I got to the point where I didn't have a job anymore. I was just doing whatever I could to support my drug habit. That turned into, you know, jail. Jail turned into prison.
Following his release from prison, Jackson says his struggles with drugs and depression became overwhelming. He was in and out of homeless shelters and in cycles of relapsing. He began sleeping on a playground and then in a storage unit.
I was laying in that storage unit one night and I thought about Tampa Hope.
Jackson has now lived at Tampa Hope for a year. He says he's had no contact with law enforcement since his prison release and is currently working as an overnight forklift operator.
No longer see myself on the path that I was living on before. You know, I just these days, failure is not an option.
It's just, it feels like a new lease on life, you know.
Eric Cox lived at Tampa Hope for about 1 year, but moved into his own Tampa apartment in December with the help from his caseworkers and other assistance programs. His path to homelessness followed a series of health complications when an open-heart surgery forced him to quit his job.
The apartment that we were living in, you know, I couldn't afford, you know, to live in it anymore, so I started living with my daughter for a little while. And it was a one-bedroom apartment, her and her husband, you know, they had recently had a baby, so I didn't want to invade on their privacy, you know, a new family, you know, trying to get their life together, raise their child. So I ended up, you know, sleeping in my car for a while.
Eric's doctor learned about his housing situation and helped connect him with Tampa Hope. It was through Tampa Hope Eric enrolled in what was a lifetime goal of his, a 12-week culinary arts program, which he puts to good use in his new kitchen.
I always remember the mise en place. It means having everything you want in front of you while preparing your meal.
He says he'd like to now create a local meal prep business.
Who knew, you know, going through this homelessness would grant me a degree, something that I've always wanted in culinary arts.
Eric, who has been active in his Christian church throughout his life, says temporary time in a tent brought solitude and silence, which strengthened his relationship with God.
When my grandmother was living, we used to have these things called tent revivals. And tent revivals, they're basically having church outside in tents. And I thought of this one song my grandmother used to say, and it reminded me that I had a tent revival every night by myself with God.
They're not the homeless. They're our brothers and sisters.
Father Mike Jones is the pastor of Sacred Heart Catholic Church in downtown Tampa, where many local unhoused people gather. He says it's in his parish's DNA to serve the homeless and even to be served by them.
There's this homeless man who came up to me and gave me $20. He goes, here, I want to give the church a donation for Christmas. And I'm like, well, you know, you might need this more than we do, you know. No, you do so much for us. A lot of times people have the conception that the homeless just want to take. And that has not been our experience. You know, a lot of them want to find a way to give back.
It's a reminder that when looking at the homeless in the streets and in the statistics, to first remember the individual stories.
Don't look at all homeless people as dirty people. They're smart people. There's educated people. There's mothers. Sometimes we just go through these phases in life that we have no control over.
Reporting from Tampa, Florida, Catherine Hadro, EWTN News In Depth.
Florida's Senate approved a controversial bill this week banning homeless people from sleeping in public. The bill now heads to Governor Ron DeSantis' desk, who supports the measure. This is the latest debate in strategy as the Sunshine State grapples with a rise in its homeless population.
I'm Rasal Rages, and coming up next, we take you to Denver, where Christ in the City and Denver Rescue Mission are transforming the lives of the homeless.
For years, Eastern Kentucky thrived with the coal industry, but now it's died out. The area faces many challenges, including rural homelessness.
Homelessness doesn't just impact big cities. Still to come, the startling numbers of children impacted by this crisis in just one rural Kentucky county.
The surge of migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border collides with the U.S. housing crisis. Cities across the country are working to help house immigrants. But as reporter Rizal Rages explains, with so many Americans without a roof over their heads, finding housing for migrants and Americans is proving unsustainable. We now look at how nonprofit organizations try to make a difference.
For the last several years, we've had increases year over year.
Denver, Colorado. Of the Mile High City's population of some 715,000, about 10,000 are homeless. According to the latest point-in-time count, this number includes the growing number of migrants. The sanctuary city is finding it difficult to live up to its reputation, with lawmakers scaling down spending for sheltering migrants.
This year we've had more because we've had individuals who are newcomers or migrants that have come into the city as well, who are coming and experiencing homelessness. So the need for resources and the strain on the system has increased.
Migrants do not qualify for most government assistance programs, like housing. But federal and state assistance can provide the city with emergency shelters in rec centers and hotels.
Our highest used program is our emergency services.
For nonprofit organizations like Denver Rescue Mission,
The most they can do for migrants is provide immediate essentials.
Meals 3 days a week, 365 days a year, emergency shelter. Across our system, we sleep over 1,000 people every night.
Tracy Brooks is the Vice President of Homelessness Resolutions at Denver Rescue Mission, whose goal is to change lives in the name of Christ. In addition to emergency services, Denver Rescue Mission offers men, women, and their children a safe place to live while they get back on their feet.
I love the opportunity to meet all the amazing people that come through our doors. I love to hear their stories.
They also provide rehabilitation and transition programs, like the New Life program for men.
It is typically men that are experiencing degrees of homelessness, substance use disorder, or experiencing mental health.
This one-year program that involves classes, work readiness training, and therapy support and equip men to become self-sufficient.
A lot of times people are coming here from years experiences of experiencing homelessness. A lot of the times their biggest need is addressing the trauma that comes from experiencing homelessness. So when they come in here, we'd like to say this is a safe place.
Changing the lives through encounter. Christ in the City missionaries walk the streets of Denver, making friends with the homeless people they come across.
My friends in the street have shown me that, like, what we all desire and, like, what is at the core of who we are is just relationship and to be seen as good.
We are here in the heart of downtown Denver, and we're about to join a group of missionaries for street ministry. Come walk with us.
Within every friend on the street, within, like, every relationship that we have, there is an ache within a wound that our friends have that they seek for love. And we are there to provide that love for them. We are there to, like, show them the love of Jesus through that ache.
Missionaries live in a common house, sharing a life of prayer and service. Along with street ministry, Christ in the City also hosts Lunch in the Park every Wednesday.
The mission is to form young Catholics to be missionaries for life, but that every person, especially the poor, would be known, loved, and seen and served.
Sam Schultz is Christ in the City's Director of Homeless Outreach. He says their hope is to walk with their homeless friends toward healing and reintegration into society.
Working at Christ in the City has helped me ground myself in my Catholic faith first, that when I see my brother or sister in need, that I respond to them in love first.
Rasal Regis, EWTN News in Depth.
Just last week, Denver's mayor announced that the state will scale back services for migrants. This includes closing four shelters in the next 4 weeks to save the city $60 million. As a result, the city will double down on case management by coordinating with nonprofits. In the past 2 years, the city reports that nearly 40,000 migrants have arrived in the Mile High City.
We've all got support systems. That's one thing we forget that a lot of these folks don't have. And that's what the churches used to be. And that's what the community used to be. And that's what their family used to be.
Stepping in to provide support for the most vulnerable of the unhoused, children. How school systems are helping when we return.
Experiencing homelessness is a difficult reality for many, especially children. They are among those impacted in the rural eastern Kentucky county of Harlan. A loss of jobs in the coal industry and an increase in drug use has left many fractured families. Helping the next generation of children thrive could depend on reinventing the future. That story from correspondent Mark Irons.
Framed images on the brick wall of a shop in eastern Kentucky show the heyday of coal, when mining brought money and economic growth to the area. Perhaps unforeseen at the time, all the risks that would come along with it. Lung disease for miners who spent years breathing in coal dust, and economic dependency for a region reliant on the success of coal. Now in a world continuously powered by alternative energy sources, the industry has gathered rust here. For years, coal was king here in eastern Kentucky, but when the industry died out, so did the jobs. And since then, the economy has deteriorated, poverty has grown,
And so have the challenges for people in this part of the country.
Levi Lewis has lived those challenges.
We come from a poor community. Poor community. Rich get rich, poor stay poor.
Lewis grew up in eastern Kentucky. He found work driving coal trucks as long as he could.
Then the coal mines started drying up and they just wouldn't work. Very few mines working.
He had to leave the region, but he still knows people back in rural eastern Kentucky who live in extreme poverty, can't find work, and don't have a home.
What can you say? They're building little shacks up there. Some of them tents, whatever, wherever they can lay down, you know.
Driving throughout Harlan County, Kentucky, on the southeastern edge of the state, we saw it firsthand, what homelessness in rural America can look like.
Sheds, buildings, deplorable conditions, trailers with no windows, no electricity, no water. That's what it looks like here.
In Harlan County, homelessness is impacting many people, perhaps most notably children. Of the little over 3,000 students enrolled in Harlan County Public Schools, 1,300 experience homelessness.
It's almost half. Not half, but almost half. And I'm sure there's students we've missed.
Gina Stewart has a full-time job in the public school system identifying these children. Officially, she's known as the McKinney-Vento liaison, serving as a link between a federal program and the county schools. The McKinney-Vento Homeless Assistance Act, originally passed by Congress in 1987, includes funding for the educational needs of students experiencing homelessness around the country. The situation in Harlan County is so bad, all nine public schools have a homelessness coordinator on staff.
We have the highest rate per capita of homeless students in Harlan County of any other district in the state of Kentucky.
So Stewart works to provide children with shoes, clothing, eyeglasses, or school supplies in an effort to help them be successful. But without a reliable place to live and a good night's sleep, it's hard enough for many just to make it to school.
Chronic absenteeism is a big problem for homeless students.
Why are some people homeless here? It could be a number of reasons. From a declining coal industry and jobs sucked out of the region to a crippling opioid epidemic that has filled the void and fractured families.
Right now, the biggest thing is drugs.
A cycle of chronic poverty continues for some. And almost 2 years ago, eastern Kentucky took another hit when a historic flood claimed 45 lives. Bordering Harlan in Letcher County, people are still recovering in the tiny town of Neon. Boarded up buildings on the main street show there's a long way to go. But this time of renewal could be just what is needed for a region that has hurt for a long time.
We want to use this disaster as an opportunity to leapfrog forward.
Since the flood, Neon resident Jeff Hawkins and his wife Cheryl have rebuilt their coffee shop and event space on the main street. A sign by the door shows how high the water was. They believe it's time to imagine a brighter future for eastern Kentucky, a place that hasn't fully recovered from the rise and fall of the coal industry. Those pictures sticking to the brick wall of their shop showing the heyday of coal are fastened to the past.
So for us in this area, we have to figure out how we will reinvent ourselves and not rely on a single industry to drive the economic future of the region.
And in the present moment, there are plenty of people who just need a hand. From those struggling with drug addiction to children and families experiencing homelessness to people like Levi Lewis, who spent years working just to live paycheck to paycheck until he couldn't even do that anymore.
What can you say? I was a working man, you know what I mean? Just making ends meet.
After he left the mines of eastern Kentucky, he settled 2 hours west here in Lexington. He found work for over 20 years, but had a stroke in 2017, couldn't keep up with bills, and found himself on the streets.
And what can you say? I laid on the streets for about almost 3 years.
Well, we have 101 beds.
Lewis says if it wasn't for the Catholic Action Center, which provides food, shelter, and community for men and women who have no home, he probably wouldn't be talking to us.
If I had got in here, I'd probably done been dead 2 years ago because you can't live in zero weather outside sleeping on the ground, you know. You got to have something to keep you from freezing to death.
You know, everybody has to have a place to call home. Everybody has to belong somewhere.
Jenny Ramsey is co-founder and director of the Catholic Action Center. It's a unique place. Without federal, state, or local funding, Ramsey says the center doesn't have a budget per se and runs on sheer generosity from the community. She encourages others to replicate this approach to service based solely on trust in God.
They have to just take the first step. Whether you call it walk in faith or whether you call it walk in foolishness, start it and you'll find out that people are good and people will help.
It's the kind of mentality that could really help those who have no home in Eastern Kentucky or any part of the country. Ramsey says to ignore them is to ignore the gospel mandate to serve.
People look beyond and don't want to see people experiencing homelessness and saying they are the poor that the scriptures talk about.
Mark Irons, EWTN News in Depth.
The Catholic Action Center in Lexington, Kentucky, opposes a state bill that could criminalize homeless individuals. We will continue tracking that legislative effort and others like it around the country. And that does it for our special broadcast. Tune in next week for more news important to your Catholic life. But before we go, we want to remind you that you can still sign up for the National Eucharistic Congress. The massive Catholic multi-day event in Indianapolis this July will draw tens of thousands. Go to EWTN.com/Eucharist and click on Register Now to receive a discount. I will be one of the event's MCs, and I look forward to seeing you there.